Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos, Daf Pei Beis. We will begin on Daf Pei Aleph, Amud Beis, 14 lines from the bottom. Nofek Rabbi Yosef, Dak V'Ashkach. As we discussed at the end of the previous shiur, we're having a debate between Rabbi Yosef and Abaya regarding the following shaila. A husband dies without any children. We know the halacha is that his wife is a candidate for Yibum, and that the brother who does Yibum will inherit all of the assets that this brother left. And that's exactly what happened. Reuven passed away, left an estate, left an almana. Shimon, his brother, is about to do Yibum. But Levi is another brother, and Levi is aware of the halacha, that if Shimon does Yibum, he will not receive any portion of this estate. And he's disappointed. So he has the following thought. He's going to give Reuven's widow a get, and as we learned in Masechta Yevamos, once this woman receives a get, she's no longer a candidate for Yibum. She'll have to receive chalitza, and then the brother passed away's entire estate will be divided and he'll get a share. So he was about to do that. So Shimon tells Levi, before you do such a thing, you know what? Don't do it. Let me do Yibum. And afterwards, I'll be fair and I'll divide the estate that I'm receiving with you. So Rav Yosef said that the entire deal is no deal. Because, as we've learned, a brother who inherits his brother as a Yavam, all of what he receives is designated for the Ksuba of the Yavama, and it's not his to make deals over. Abaya disagreed, and Abaya said that he certainly is able to make such a deal, and he disagrees with Rabbi Yosef, and he brings a raya from the first mission of our Perek, where Rabbi Beis Hillel says that an Arusa who receives Nichsei Melug, even though she's not supposed to sell them, if she did, it's b'diavad acceptable. So the question was sent, as we learned, to different Amoraim, for their opinion. The last Amor that we had that was asked this question was Rabbi Menyumi, and Rabbi Menyumi says he doesn't agree with Rabbi Yosef. However, if Rabbi Yosef will be successful and finding some sort of a braisa or a mishnah that corroborates his opinion, he says, let me know, because then I'll be willing to reconsider. And that's what we're up to. Nofek Rav Yosef Dok V'Ashkach. Rav Yosef found a braisa that seems to corroborate his opinion. The Tanya. Harei shayid noisha ba'achiv v'meis. Our example, Reuven lent money to his brother Shimon, and now Reuven passes away without children. So Shimon owes Reuven money, v'niach shemeres yavam, and Reuven also, and now Shimon also has to do Yibum in Reuven's widow. Lo yomer. So Shimon, at first glance, could say the money I owe now is the money I owe to myself, because since he's doing Yibum in Reuven's widow, as we've said, he's going to inherit all of Reuven's estate. So part of the estate is the money that Shimon owes him, is the money that he owed Reuven. So now essentially he owes himself the money. So he could say, Lo yoyma hoyovash ani yorish, I'm inheriting everything that belonged to Reuven. Hechzakti, I'm also inheriting the money that I owe to Reuven. And no longer I owe it. I no longer owe it. El maitzim miyavam. And the halacha is that we take this money that Reuven, that Shimon owes Reuven, v'yikach ben karka, he should buy property, and that property, he is designated for the ksuba of Reuven's almana, v'yikach peiros, and he could eat the peiros of this property. So what do we see? That the halacha is that he is owed himself money, but since she has a ksuba claim, he can't make any transactions on money that he would really owe himself. Certainly he's not in a position to make deals with one of his brothers. Others explain the Gemara, we're not going to go into this concept now, that the reason his mechila is ineffective, the Pashup Shad, is because it's not his to be meichel, because this money is supposed to be designated for ksuba. That's how most Rishonim learn. Other Rishonim explain that mechila is only possible, the definition of mechila is a halachic concept. Mechila means that you owe me money. So mechila means that I could forgive you. So there's a meichel, me the forgiver, and a nimchel, you're the one that I'm forgiving. But if the meichel and the nimchel are all the same individual, there is no concept of mechila. We're not going to learn that Gemara, the Gemara this way. So here we see that he's not in a position to make transactions. Similarly, he's not in a position to tell his brother, I'm meichel, and I'll give you half. Amalei Abaya, says Abaya, maybe the way to understand that braisa is to teach us Dilma de Tavale of delay. And the way Rashi explains what the Gemara is saying is as follows. Maybe what the braisa is not coming to say suggests Abaya, that the brother has no right to make transactions over the money that he receives his brother's estate. But the braisa is teaching us is that the braisa is giving him some good advice. Take that money, invest it in real estate, you eat the payers, and have the money designated for the amana. Ask Tosfos and Rashi's pshat. Our braisa is coming to give us business advice? That if somebody inherits money, the smart thing to do is to put it into real estate? What's pshat in the Gemara? So Tosfos explains that the Gemara is saying as follows. Here, this Yavam is taking in the Yavama as his wife. The Yavama is in a very uncomfortable situation. As we learned, and we're going to learn later in the shiur today, she doesn't get a new ksuba from the second husband. She receives a ksuba from the estate of the first husband. So the Gemara is teaching us, Abaye is suggesting that the Brice is teaching us, let's make this woman feel comfortable. And also, you'll be comfortable, Mr. Yavam. How do we accomplish that? By the Yavam buying real estate, him meeting the payers, so he gets a steady income, and as Yavama knowing that these karka will be set aside, designated for a ksuba. That's what the braisa means to say. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef says to Abaye, Tana, if you're saying that all the braisa means is to give us good advice, so let's look at the words of the braisa. Maitzian, the braisa says that if he didn't do it, the deal is void. The transaction is void. That I'm the tavalei avdu. If all the braisa means is to give us good advice, that wouldn't void the transaction if he didn't follow our good advice. So right now we seem to be having a braisa that corroborates Rabbi Yosef's opinion. As we quoted earlier, Rabbi Yumi said, if Rabbi Yosef finds a braisa to back himself up, I want to see that braisa. So now that Rabbi Yosef has found this braisa, they sent it to Rabbi Yumi to review. So Rabbi Yumi said, this braisa, Amar Rav Nachman, I know I have a Kabbalah about this braisa, Zu'ena Mishnah. This braisa is not authoritative. Ask the Ramai Tama, what is wrong with this braisa that they're just disqualifying it? What are we discussing this braisa? A chayv, a debt that existed between these two brothers. And as the Rishonim explained, every debt is considered metaltlin. Because even if there's a lien from property on the debt, there's a mortgage, the debt is I borrowed money and I'm going to pay back money, which is all metaltlin. And umatatulik sublim shabdi. So how could you say that the money that he owed his brother is owed for the ksuba? Money is metatlin. Tatlin aren't obligated to ksuba. That, asked the Gemara, is not a reason to disqualify a braisa. Could dim ramehi, perhaps this braisa represents the opinion of Rameya. Dam metatlin shabdi l'ksuba. Rameya holds that even metatlin are to be used to pay off the ksuba. And as machlokes rishonim, how to understand the machlokes between Rameya and the Chachamim. The Rameya holds the Metatlin are obligated for Ksuba, and the Chachamim disagree. Most Rishonim explain that according to the Chachamim, Ksuba cannot be collected from Metatlin. They're not considered obligated, mortgaged, and Rameya disagrees. Other Rishonim, however, learn that if there are two times, basically, when a Ksuba is paid. Either if a marriage ends in a divorce, where the husband pays directly to the wife, as the marriage ends, or if the husband dies and she's entitled to the ksuba. The Rishonim that want to suggest that if the husband is paying directly to the wife, then everybody agrees that anything he owns, even his metaplin, are meshuba to the ksuba. It's only in a case where he died and his yorshim are paying, that's where we have the machlokas or Ramei Chachamim, where Ramei is saying that even then the metaplin are meshuba and the chum disagreeing. So we're back to where we started. Rabbi Yumi is disqualifying this price, is saying it's not authoritative. Why? The reason this price, says the Gemara suggests, is not authoritative, because What's happening here? Shimon is saying to Reuven's widow, this money that I owed Reuven, I don't know you. I borrowed money from my brother Reuven. I'm the one that's inheriting my brother. You have no claims here. I never borrowed money from you. Ask the Gemara, that's not true. Because we have a concept that we're very familiar with from throughout Shas. We know about Shibud Reb Nosson. The Tanya Reb Nosson Omer. How do we know that Reuven owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money? Levi goes directly to Reuven. He bypasses Shimon. Tamalayim, the pasuk that speaks about a case where one falsely swore that he didn't owe someone else money, and then he confesses that the halacha is that he has to pay a keren and chaimish and bring in a carbon ashram. When the pasuk describes the situation, the pasuk says v'nosan l'asher oshem loy. And as we explained this gemara many times, the words in the pasuk are somewhat superfluous. It says v'nosan, he should pay it. What did it say l'asher oshem loy, that to whom he owes? To teach us the din of Shibud Reb Nosson. So let's go back to our gemara. If Shimon owed his brother Reuven money, and Reuven was married to a woman who he owed a ksuba, so Shimon does owe the Almana money. So what's the Gemara suggesting? That Shimon could say to this Almana, or his Yavama, I don't know you. I never borrowed money from you. It's not true. Shibud Reb Nosson tells us that since he owed Reuven, and Reuven owed her, he owes her. And he can't say, I have no relationship, financial relationship with you. I don't want to go in today's shir to discuss Shibud Reb Nosson. It's not today's sugya. But one vart in the Shibud Reb Nosson that the Mefarshim discuss. How do we view a Shibud Reb Nosson? Do we view Shibud Reb Nosson, again in our example, Reuven owing Shimon, Shimon owing Levi. So now when Levi comes to collect the money owed to him, does the halacha say that he goes to Shimon, and if Shimon can't pay, then he has a right to go to Reuven? Or does the halacha say, through Shibud Reb Nosson, that we don't, that Shimon's out of the picture, and Reuven goes directly to, Levi goes directly to Reuven? What would be the nafkamina? The Tzai says a gevaldige nafkamina. What would be the halacha if Shimon now forgives the debt that Levi owes him? If we're going to say that Shimon is out of the picture, Shimon is not in a position anymore to forgive debts. But if on the other hand, we say that Shimon is still here, it's just that if Shimon can't pay, Levi goes to Reuven, so Shimon's still a player here, and he could be Meichel the Chayiv, and then Levi can't go to Reuven. So the Gemara says, why, going back to Agmar, why are you saying that this price is incorrect? Shibud Reb Nosson does make her a factor here. Answers the Gemara, lo yash b'chon tana d'mach matrei chumri b'ksuba. Ksuba, this is the way most Rishonim explain this Gemara. The concept of ksuba is a concept of the Rabbonim, the entire concept. To make this price sensible, we have to take two chumras. One chumra is the chumra of Rameya, that even metatlin amashubah to ksuba, and the other is to take the chumra of the Shibud Reb Nosson. Something which is only a takana de rabbonon, we can't take two chumras. El ik Rameya, ik Reb Nosson. We could either follow Rameya's chumra, that metatlin amashubah to ksuba, or we could follow Reb Nosson's chumra, that we say Shibud Reb Nosson, but we can't combine both. Now says Rava, I'm a Rava in Kain Hanu the Shemana Leil Abaya. Now we can understand what Abaya said. Demazuena Mishnah, that he said that this price is not authoritative. V'lo Yadana Mayi, we didn't understand why, and now we understand why. And like to Rishonim point out, at the beginning Abaya said that the price really was maybe only telling us an Eitz Taiva. But now and that was a difficult explanation, as the Gemara taught us. But now we don't have to rely on that difficult explanation. Now we see from this brisa, clearly we see from this Gemara why this brisa is not to be accepted. Ask the Pnei Yeshua. This entire explanation that the Gemara gave to discredit the brisa is only based on our saying that ksuba is the Rabbanim. But we go back to our shiurim from that base. If you recall, we discussed there's a big shaila, ksuba is the Rabbanim, the brisa. So according to the shittas that hold ksuba is the brisa, how will they explain this Gemara? So the base Aaron says a very interesting teretz, and goes back to a concept that we spoke about earlier in our shir. He says, as we said earlier, there are two times that a person could be obligated to pay ksuba. Either a husband to a wife when they get divorced, or when the wife, when the husband dies. He says the entire shaila of ksuba daraisa the rabbanon is only when the husband is paying the wife directly. So there we have a machlokes, is a daraisa the rabbanon. But in a case where it's the estate of the husband paying the almana a ksuba, everybody agrees that the ksuba is the rabbanon. Al Gemara is referring to a case where the husband died. It's a situation of yibum. Everybody agrees that that's ksuba d'rabbanan, and that's why what the Gemara says is 100% acceptable. Continues the Gemara. Similar situation. Who gave the nafla yivama b'mas machasya? There was an individual that yivama fell to him. And his brother again wanted to give her a get. So the brother who's going to do the yibum should not be the sole proprietor of all of the estate. And the brother who wants to do Yibim tells his brother, why do you want to do this? Because you don't want that I should get all of the estate. I'm willing to divide, and I won't take all of the estate of my deceased brother. So the brother says, I came to the Daf Yomi Shir. Mr. Fina, I know, I'm concerned that obviously, you're going to do the same as the previous Gemara, where the brother promised, and then didn't deliver. So Tysus and all the Rishonim asked the obvious question. It wasn't because the brother was a thief. He learned that Rabbi Yosef said that the transaction, the deal is not a deal. Why are we calling him a thief? So the Rishonim explained like this. This brother who made the promise had no intention of fulfilling his promise because he's a thief. It happens to be that Rabbi Yosef halachically agrees that the deal is not a deal. But that wasn't the reason that he wasn't going to pay. He wasn't going to pay because he's a Ramai. Amalei. So the brother said to him, we'll do better. Ibai's pleglich mahashta. In that case, the brother said that after I do Yibam, and I take over all of the Nechassim, that's when we'll divide. I'll divide today, before I do Yibam. Amar Mabar of Ashi. Avgab d'chiyosir of Dimi Amar of Yoichran. Haim l'chaveroi. Even though the halach is leich u'mishoich parzu. Let's say I say to you, I'm selling you my cow. However, we know we have to have a ma'aseh kinyan. But I say to you, that the kinyan should only be effective for after 30 days. So the halach is lach olam yoyim kono. V'afil ma'edus ba'agam. If 30 days from now, the cow is not even in my rishus, or it's not in the rishus of the buyer, it makes no difference. The kinyan is effective. So here too, why can't we say that his division today of the nechassim that he doesn't yet own still should be effective? Says the one, you can't compare the two situations. Hasam biyadai. In a case where I sell you my cow, I could theoretically sell it to you for today. I want, for whatever reason, that we have our needs, that the deal should not be effective for another 30 days. That's why it's effective. Because I could have theoretically done it today. Hacha. In our case, it's not effective. Today, he doesn't own these assets yet. So the Gemara just goes off for a second to ask, that the halach is that if I sell you my cow, and I say, do the Mashiach today, but it should only be effective in 30 days, it's not effective. How do you say it is? Says the Gemara, loy kasha. Had amalei k'ni me'achshav, had loy amalei k'ni me'achshav. If when I sell you the cow today, I add the words k'ni ma'achshav, so even though I say that it should only be effective within 30 days, the halach is that the kinyan is a kinyan. Whereas if I don't add the words k'ni ma'achshav, then the kinyan would not be an effective kinyan. And there's a machlokes ha'mefarshim, how to understand what the ma'achshav accomplishes. Some mefarshim explain that what the ma'achshav accomplishes, it's interesting pshat, is that it's like a slow cooking kinyan. It starts today, and it culminates at 30 days. And that's why, since the kinyan started today, it's an effective kinyan. Others say that the kinyan is only effective at the end, but it's retroactively effective to today. What's the nafkamina? A very big nafkamina. What would be the status of this cow during these 30 days? If we say it started on day 1 and culminated on day 30, so it's the seller's until the day 30. If we say it's some sort of a retroactive kinyan, it becomes the buyer's retroactively to the first day. But relevant to us, it's different because we could have made the kinyan today. Mashenken, however, in the case of a yavam doing deals over assets that he didn't receive yet, it's totally unacceptable. Bray minei me'ula. So they asked Ula the following shayla. Yibin vach kachilik. If the brother received the assets of his brother after he did yibum, and now he goes and divides them up. Mahu. Is it acceptable? Is it a valid transaction? So he said, lo yosef lo klum. It's meaningless. Why is it meaningless? Because all, as we've been learning, all of the assets are designated for the ksuba. How about chilek v'lach kach yibam? If he divided them before he did even yibam. So he says, lo'asuv lo'klum, also meaningless. It's even more meaningless because it's a davish labalaylam. He doesn't even own these assets yet. And that's actually the Gemara's question. Maskler of Sheshis has to even vach kach ilek. We already own the assets. But since they're designated for the ksuba, that loch is loyosuv leklom, certainly in a situation of chilek v'ach kach yibim, mibaye, who doesn't even own the assets, he has no ability to do transactions over them. So why do we have to say both cases? Says the Gemara Shnei Maisim Hava. There were two separate incidents. He was a Rav. One time he was asked to shayla yibim v'ach kach chilek, and another time he was asked to shayla chilek v'ach kach yibim. Ki asu Rav and Amrish Lakish, ben yibim v'ach kach chilek, whether he first did yibim and then he divides up these assets, or ben chilek v'ach kach yibim, or if he divided, if he received, he divided them up before yibim, lo yosu leklum, and that is the halacha like Rav Yosef says, lo yosu leklum, because all of the assets are designated for the ksuba. So the Rishonim asked the obvious question. When Ula said this, yibim v'ach kach chilek, and then chilek v'ach kach yibim, the Gemara asked, why do you have to say it? And why when Ravin says both, does the Gemara not ask that question? So the Rishonim answer, it's a big lesson. The Rishonim say as follows. It's very common for the Tanoim and Amoroim to speak and say things that are obvious. It's called loizu afsu. And that's why the Gemara would never ask the question, why did he say both? However, why did you ask the second question if you know the answer from the first question? Don't ask foolish questions. And at that, the Gemara answers, it wasn't a foolish question because it was two separate incidents. Now, the Mefarshim also go in to try to understand. Now that we're saying whether it's chilek v'ach kach yibim or yibim v'ach kach chilek, that loch is loyosuv leklum, is there any nafkamina? And the Mefarshim find a very nice nafkamina. In the case of chilek v'ach kach yibim, it's meaningless because you can't divide and you can't do deals over something you don't own yet. In the case of yibim v'ach kach chilek, if we follow the opinion of the Chachamim, who say that metaltalin are not meshubah to ksuba. So if a brother did yibum and now took over all of the estate of his deceased brother, so yes, the karka, he can't do transactions. They're all obligated to the ksuba. The metaltalin are not obligated to the ksuba, and therefore he would be able to divide up, to do transactions over those metaltalin. The chamamim, peres mechubar mekarka l'shaloi. The chamamim mishnah said that the peres that are attached to the ground belong to the Yavam. Amai asked him, why does it belong to the Yavam? Why shouldn't it be included in what we learned? It should be considered karka that's designated for the ksuba payment. So Resh Lakish says, indeed, Tanishalah. We should change the gears of the Bryce of the Mishnah. It's not say that he could do whatever he wants, but actually they're designated for her ksuba payment. So I saw that the Tosfos Yontif, something that we don't usually find in the Mefarshim, asks, how did the Mishnah come to make this mistake? Which, you know, we many times in Shas have that the Gemara changed the word, and the Mefarshim don't try to understand how did the Mishnah make the mistake. Here he tries to explain. So he says, since we've been learning in the previous Mishnayos that there's a question regarding payers that are attached to the ground. And if you recall, when we learned the earlier Mishnah in the Perek, there was a discussion. Some say it's her, some say it's his. And that's why they got confused. And here they wrote the word Shaloi when it should have been Shaloh. We learned in the Mishnah also, Kansarei Ki'ishtai, that once a Yavam takes a Yavam in Fiyibam, she's his full-fledged wife. Ask the Gemara Maihach, so what's the Haloch Lamaitza? Om Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Loima, Shemagash Veget Magzira. That once the Yavam marries the Yavam, she's his regular wife, and if he wants to terminate the marriage, he has to give her a get. And there's halacha that a person can remarry his wife, provided that she didn't marry anyone in the interim, and provided that he's not a kohen. That will be the halacha with a yavam and a yavama. If a yavam took a yavama, and then he divorced her, he could take her back. Says the Gemara, Megash beget pshita, is his wife. And the way a husband divorces a wife is with a get. Answers the Gemara, Mad time of Vyivma Amarachmana. Since the Torah used the word Vyivma, I would suggest V'dayan Yivuma Harishonim Aleho. Unlike Tizla Beget. And the way the Rishonim explained this Gemara is to say that perhaps she should require both a get and a chalitza if he wants to terminate the marriage. But Tizla Beget El Bechalitza, she required both a get and a chalitza. Kamash Malon. And just to review Gemara Masech Yivamis, what do we learn from the word Vyivma? We learn from the word Vyivma that Yivam could be done by Korcho. Machzira, Shita. Once they got married, so he could take her back after he divorces her. I would think once a Yavam marries a Yavama, and he did his mitzvah, and then he divorces her, that she reverts back to the status of an Ashes Ach, and he cannot take her. So Taisha says that the Gemara never suggested that while they're married, he can't have regular beer with her. Because while they're married, certainly the husband and wife, and all the rules of a husband and wife apply. What the Gemara means to say, Tosfos, is that once they get divorced, perhaps she reverts back to the status of a Eishes Ach, and asks the Gemara, indeed, Eimach Nami, maybe that should be the din. Amakrav, Lechel, Leisha, Kivin, and like we learned in Masechta Yevamos, why does the Torah have to add the word Leisha? To teach us, Kivin Shalacha, once he marries her, Nasis Kishta, she's considered his full-fledged wife. So some cipher asks a very interesting question. He says, these are all very nice halachas, teaching us the relationship between a Yavam and Yavama. So but we're not learning Masechta Yevamos, we're learning Masechta Ksubas. So how does this come into our Mishnah, into our Gemara? So he says, based on what we've been learning, and we're going to learn more about it in a moment, since we see that the relationship between a Yavam and his wife is not exactly identical to the relationship between a husband and wife. Why? Because we've learned that the Yavam doesn't have to write his own ksuba. The Yavam just takes over the ksuba of his deceased brother. So since we see that it's not a regular marriage, so maybe these dinim that apply, that get, machzir shouldn't apply. That's what the Gemara had to teach us, that in regarding all other halachas, it is considered a regular husband and wife. We learned that the ksuba obligation, as we've been learning, goes from the estate of the first husband, my tama. And the Rishonim explained the Gemara in a number of ways. One way is, why shouldn't he write his own ksuba? A husband has to write a ksuba to his wife. So why shouldn't the Yavam have to write a ksuba to Yavama? Another way that we show him explain the Gemara's question is, perhaps this woman should be entitled to two ksubas. One ksuba from her first husband, and now another ksuba from the Yavam. Answers the Gemara, Isha Hikna Lamin Shemayim. Where is there a din that a husband has to write his wife a ksuba when he chose her as a wife? Here he didn't choose her as a wife. The Torah legislated that she has to be his wife, and therefore the regular dinim of ksuba don't apply. However, says the Gemara, let's say the first husband didn't leave her anything. Then the second one has to write his own ksuba. Islam is shani. Why? Because as we've learned so many times, the purpose of the ksuba is to serve as the deterrent to a divorce. And if he doesn't have an ksuba obligation, that deterrent won't exist, and therefore he has to write a ksuba. Ask the Rishonim the obvious question. If at the end of the day he's paying a ksuba, whether he's paying it from the estate that he got from his brother, or whether he's paying it from his own pocket, what's the difference? So some Rishonim answer, very simple terms. His brother married this woman as a psula. The ksuba of a psula is masayim, 200 zuz. He married her, she was already a bula. So he would only have to write a ksuba of 100 zuz. So if the ksuba is being assumed from the estate of the first brother, the obligation would be 200 zuz. If it's coming from the Yavam's estate, it's from the Yavam's assets, it's only 100. But many Rishonim disagree with this approach, because they say since the Yavam's marriage is a continuation of the marriage of the first marriage, so he has to pay 200 zuz under all circumstances. So they say the nafkamina is as follows. What would be the halacha if when the brother died and left the almana, he did have an estate, he did have assets? So we're learning now that those assets are obligated to the ksuba. Even though, and the second brother, the Yavam, doesn't have to worry. Now, when that marriage terminates, whether he dies or gets divorced, something happened to all of the assets of the first brother, and they're no longer in existence. Since when they did Yibum, he didn't become abrogated from his assets. It was only the assets of the deceased brother, and those assets are no longer here. She would not be entitled to a ksuba payment. Continues the Gemara. Lo yemelai rei ksubasech. We learned in the Mishnah that a Yavam can't tell the Yavama, I'm designating money for you from the assets that I got from my brother for the ksuba. And the Mishnah said, so too should no husband tell it to a wife. Ask the Gemara, why does the Mishnah have to teach us the same din, both between a Yavam and a Yavama, and between a husband and a wife? Mai v'chein, answers the Gemara, as we've just learned, a Yavam doesn't write a new ksuba to his wife. So since the Yavam doesn't write a new ksuba to his wife, he doesn't write the words that anything I own, and will eventually own, is designated for ksuba. So the wife, the Yavama, has this uneasy feeling. Will she be able to collect a ksuba payment? That's why Chazal said that everything he owns is designated for ksuba payment. Aval hacha, in a husband and a wife, that when he writes a ksuba to his wife, the kasla of the kani v'kanina, that he writes to her that everything I own will be designated as a ksuba, aim is some chadata, and therefore he should be able to designate money for the ksuba payment. Kamash Malan, that even if he designates money for the ksuba payment, it wouldn't help him because everything he owns is designated for the ksuba. And as we learned in the previous year, Kui Chazara, it will only come to, as it only could hurt him. Because what happens is that if that money that he designates for the ksuba payment somehow gets lost, he'll have to write a new ksuba. Girsha, when he divorces her, Ein lo ela ksubasa. And this, says the Gemara, is what we learned yesterday in the previous year. In loy gar shaloy, that if a Yavam marries his Yavama, and as we've been explaining, everything that he gets, all of the estate that he gets from his dead brother, becomes designated for the ksuba. So how, as the, just to use the example the Gemara gave us in the previous year, how we'll have a situation that this brother got a huge estate from his deceased brother, and it's completely locked up? What is the only way that he could ever free it up, is that he should divorce the Yavama, and then marry her, and they'll be a regular couple, and then the halacha, everything is designated to the ksuba, will not be any more relevant. That, says the Gemara, is what the Mishnah teaches us. Gir she'in, loy gir shelo. Only if he goes through this process of divorcing the Yavama, and then writing a new ksuba, then can he free up the estate for him to do business with, otherwise he can't. Kamashma to the Rav Abba, which is exactly what Rav Abba taught us in the previous year. Hechzira, harei ki kala nirshim. If he takes her back, she's a regular wife. Vein lo ela ksubasa, but the ksuba is on the first ksuba. Hechzira mai kamashma. Tanina, isn't this something that we already learned? The Mishnah says, hamagarish ha'isha, if somebody divorces his wife, machzira, and then he marries her. Amas ksuba rishoyna machzira. He doesn't have to write a new ksuba. Just rather, the ksuba is the, we assume, he just reassuming the original ksuba. However, as we said in the previous year, this halacha is only applicable if he didn't pay out the ksuba after he divorced her. Certainly, if he paid her after they got divorced, and he paid the ksuba, and now they get remarried, the old ksuba is history. We would say, where does the halacha apply that if somebody divorces his wife and then takes her back, that we say that the new marriage is built on the old ksuba, where the first marriage was a regular marriage, a husband and wife. Avu yivamta, in a situation where the marriage was only the marriage of a yavam and a yavama, the loy iu kasavlo. It's not he who wrote the first ksuba. It's really just that he assumed his brother's ksuba. So we might have thought, hecha de gir shavahadra, where he takes her back, ema ksubasamine. Now he has to write his own ksuba, because if he's remarrying her, he can't rely on a ksuba that he didn't write in the first place. Kamash Milan, since he did assume that obligation, it's considered his ksuba, and he can remarry her based on it. Amar Yehuda. So Yehuda teaches us a little the history of ksuba. Rishonah Yekarsim Ksula Masayim V'Amana Mana. So the way most Rishonim explain this Gemara was that a husband wrote to his wife, I'm going to pay you a ksuba. No mortgage, no lien. He says, here's the money. V'ayimaskinim v'loy ha'yinosim nashim. And women didn't want to get married because there was no obligation, there was no real obligation to pay the ksuba. Because what happened here was that a husband or a husband's estate could go and try to hide all of the assets when the husband dies or divorces her, and she has no recourse. That anything he owned, ever owned or will own, is obligated to the ksuba. That's obviously much harder to hide, and that gave the woman the comfort level to get married. At the beginning, they used to write for psula masayim, a mana, with no obligation. Just if I have money, you could take it. The women didn't want to get married on that basis. So they made up that he's going to take out the ksubimam. When the husband marries a wife, he has to go put in escrow by the girl's parents the money that he owes for ksuba. However, that's the other problem. We are learning that a ksuba is a deterrent, as we said earlier in our shiur. That a ksuba is a deterrent from a husband to doing a capricious divorce. Why? Because he knows I'm going to have to dig in to my pocket and find the money. But if the money is anyway laying in escrow that he can't do anything with, so he says, get divorced. I don't have any use for that money. We don't want to see that. Hiskinus came up with a new takana. That he leaves it in his home. Because as we've learned so many times, typically in those times, when a chasan and kala got married, they came to live with the husband's family. The wealthy women would take this money that was set aside for ksuba and use them for silver or gold baskets. And they used to make it for urinal. And the Rishonim are very disturbed. You're taking the ksuba money, you have nothing else to do with it, to use it for urinal. So most Rishonim explain, the Ritva goes into great depth in explaining, they take out the words, shememei reglaim. They didn't use it as urinal, they used it for an abit. They used it as a basket. Just what's the difference? The wealthy people, because they ask another question, the amount that's given for ksuba is the same by a wealthy person or by a poor person. Yes, we did learn the concept of Taisus Ksuba, but there's a Chiv Ksuba that's identical by everyone. So they explain the following. The wealthy people, Baruch Hashem, had everything that they needed. And since they, Baruch Hashem, had everything that they needed, so if they have this extra Ksuba money that they have, so they transfer it to a luxury item. What's a luxury item? Kaltash HaKesef HaShelzov. The poor people don't have any extra income. So if they have this money, they're going to transfer it to something that they need on a daily basis. A bit. Something that they could use on a daily basis. However, it still doesn't work well. He already has all of his super money sitting, not being used by him in business. So it becomes, again, very easy to get a divorce. He doesn't have the money set aside, but he has the obligation. So now, if somebody divorces his wife, or is going to want to divorce his wife, he's going to think twice, because he's going to have to perhaps sell a piece of real estate that he owns, he's perhaps going to have to free up some stocks that he owns, so that's going to be a deterrent to a get. So I sorted Mefarshim, already learning 80 Bladim Sechtik Subas, use this Gemara to teach us the basis for a very common minig. Many people, they get married. Nowadays, they pay to have the ksuba written by artists, and it's very beautiful artwork, and it's hung up in the house. And the Mefarshim tried to find the source for this minik. So one source is our Gemara. Just like in those days, they transferred the ksuba into a kaltish or kesef v'shelzov. So we see that they used the ksuba to be an item of beauty. So the ksuba should be an item of beauty. But then I saw another pshat. Because, specifically nowadays, but the Mefarshim want to suggest that even in the times of Chazal, if we really look at it, the ksuba payment is not such a substantial sum. That we've been discussing in today's shiur, that payment is the deterrent for a divorce. And it's not really the deterrent for, it's not really such a significant deterrent that if there's shalom bayis problems, that should be the deterrent. So Mefarshim say that the ksuba when a husband writes a ksuba to his wife, that is, so to speak, binding them together. And if they have a breakdown, if there's a problem in the shalom bayis, they look at the ksuba, and the ksuba reminds them and reinforces that bond that exists between the husband and wife. And perhaps that's why the ksuba is hung up on the wall, to always remember that ahavas ne'urim, that relationship that was between the husband and wife, that should never be broken. And that's why many people may be familiar, there are menhagim, that if there's shalom bayis problems, the rabbanim used to say to check the ksuba, if the ksuba was written properly. Because the ksuba is here as a vehicle for shalom bayis, not as much as a deterrent, but more to cause shalom bayis. I also saw an interesting tshuva from Ramosha. You know, the ksuba is a document that belongs to the wife, that in case chas v'shalom, the marriage terminates in one, whatever circumstances, she's entitled to this payment. So the question is, where should the ksuba be kept? So there are mefarshim that suggest that the wife should give the ksuba to her parents for safekeeping. Ramosha discusses, where should a wife keep a ksuba? So Ramosha says the obligation is for every wife to have a ksuba. We learned earlier the sugis about Ishab like Suba is a Surah Labala. And Ramajah says she should keep it safekeeping. But you know, in a house where a husband and wife live, what's shot that she should keep it in a safe place? So Ramajah says there is no Isser to that a wife's husband should know where her Ksuba is. It's not something that she has to hide from him. It's not the Afikayman. But he says a very interesting thing. He says, why does she not have to hide it from him? Because if she knows her husband is a trustworthy person, and just because he knows that where she's keeping the ksuba, he's not going to go and hide it and take it away, so she can let him know where it is. But Ramosha says a very interesting explanation. He says, what's pshat a trustworthy person? It doesn't mean a trustworthy person that she's confident that we have a very good marriage, and that our marriage will never fall apart, and therefore I don't have to worry that I'll ever have to collect the ksuba. He says, that's not pshat a trustworthy person. Pshat a trustworthy person is that the marriage, chas v'shalom, may fall apart. But even if the marriage falls apart, that doesn't mean that the husband is not an honest person. She has to have the confidence that her husband is an honest person, and therefore she doesn't care that even if chas v'shalom something should happen, that this marriage should fall apart, he won't do something wrong in taking away her document that entitles her to the ksuba payment that she should never need. Hadron l'chi isha, hadron l'chi isha, hadron l'chi isha.